4:34, it's downtown on a Wednesday afternoon, and time for this week's Sports Lit 101 with Bruce Pratt here with us in studio.
Yeah, originally I had thought we would look at some new sports poetry this week, but I had a chance this weekend to really think about deep travel in Thoreau's wake on the Concord and Merrimack by my late friend David Leff, which I had planned to talk about again, because on Sunday, we were up at camp on Sunday, and my son and his wife were there, and they're both skilled whitewater people, and Ben is a whitewater guide and a safety boat guide and, you know, paramedic, and they have Will in his first aid, and Logan's a really good, all these kinds of things too. So they play in the whitewater a lot, but they said, you know, why don't we paddle from Burbank to Lobster Stream, which is a flatwater part of the Penobscot River. And I it's beautiful. It's not far from where we live, even though there's the hassle of dealing with North Maine woods, another whole story. But I said, okay, great. I thought it'd be fun. So my daughter-in-law, Logan, and the dog, Riley, and Janet went in a canoe. Ben took a regular kayak, and I was in my sea kayak, and we put in, and it's about a two-hour trip. But what was really interesting was I decided to apply everything David talks about when you go to some place like this. Now, back on Memorial Day weekend in 1971, me and five of my friends put in three canoes in the Moose River just between Jackman and Rockwood, camped overnight in Rockwood after a few mishaps on the way down, and then began what would be the paddle all the way up Moosehead Lake, across in leaving the Kennebec watershed into the Penobscot, to the Allegash, and finally to the St. John. We took out at St. Francis, which is, you know, almost to Fort Kent. So it was the days of heavy aluminum canoes and big Australian Wanigan ammunition boxes for everything. And it was a big endeavor. We're going for a long time. And the day that we started to go up Moosehead from Rockwood, there was a tremendous gale blew up, and we got pushed over to Kineo, and we stayed there for a couple hours. Then the day got perfect main day. And we canoed up the east side of the lake, and we were having a great time, stopped quickly for lunch. And then about a half a mile from Northeast Kerry, it got very dark, and then it started to snow. And then it changed back to sleet, and you could just hear it banging off the aluminum canoes. We're exhausted, we're wet, we're cold. We get over there, and the guy at the paper company place says, "Oh, you can't camp here." I said, "What do you mean?" He said, "You have to go up, you have to portage." I said, "We got to portage a mile. It's almost dark. It's snowing." So there was a guy named Billy DePlissa, who was known as the Hermit of Northeast Kerry. And he said, "You can camp on my land. The paper company can't do a damn thing about it." I said, "All right." So we went over, and he was nice to us, and we camped there. The next day, we had to have a fire, dry everything out for the second night. We made the portage. It's about a mile, I think. In my memory, it's a mile. I could look it up. And it took two trips, and then we went into the Penobscot. Now, this week, the weather was beautiful. The water was calm. The current was nice. It was at flood stage then. And so when we got in the river, we got down to Lobster Stream, it seems like in 15 minutes. I mean, it was longer than that. But the river was really moving, and we were going into Lobster Lake to take a break day. And we couldn't see the bridge because we were canoeing into Lobster Lake on the current.
Wow. Right,
which is supposed to be coming out the other way. Mm. Look down for the campsite, and we can't find it. We know we've got it right. And this guy Barney, who was from Maryland, goes, "Maybe that's why them picnic tables down there are chained to trees." And we look down in the water. It's a true story. And at least 10 feet below us there. So we find a place to camp. We take a day to rest because it's just got to do that. So 2 days. So that night, the second night, they close Subumic Dam and the water level drops. And we canoe downstream from Lobster Lake and went on to have just a great trip. I mean, an epic trip. Well, it's been over 50 years since I've been to Penobscot Farms, where we put in. And where we put in on that trip, which was most of the way on our trip. So paddling a section of the river I didn't know. And I practiced what David said. A deep traveler is never a tourist. You're always looking for everything. So I was out front. I think everybody else thought I was being a show off, but I had the bigger kayak. It's easier to get out front. And I'm the first one to spot the cormorants and the herons and the kingfishers. And then an eagle sitting on the top of a tree. And the universal sign when you're paddling is you hold your paddle straight up in the air and then point to where you see something. That eagle sat there calmly, didn't move. I stopped paddling. The others started to catch up, just drifting along. And I thought, that's deep travel. Because the last time we were so worried, I didn't have to paddle in the bow. Henry was just in the back, just steering. That we had that much current. We didn't have to do anything with it. Then when we got to Penobscot Farms, I suddenly said to myself, do I remember this section of the river? It's been over a half a century. Do I remember this section of the river? I remember that you could look down and you see the grass that grows in the river in the summer flows sort of like angel hair downstream. You can find the old pieces of 4-foot cordwood that have been left from the log drives. They're still there, right? Wow. And the banks, but the banks of the river now were banks. When we were going at flood stage, they were just like little banks, right? So it was seeing the same place completely differently. And I thought about something Thoreau wrote years ago, which I've always admired. He said, if you want to go to some place of renowned beauty, go in inclement weather. Because when it clears up and it's scrubbed clean, you'll never see it in a more beautiful state. Mm. And it had rained a couple of days before that. And as the river bends back to the east, you start to go back to see the Spencer Mountains and the like, which we see when we look due south from camp. But we come about around a big circle, all from a different angle. And the light is on them in a different way. And I thought to myself, this is why it's great to do. When you're in whitewater, you have to pay attention. Yeah. You can't be looking around, right? And when you're at flood stage, you can't really be looking around. You got to be paying attention because you could see a log floating by and miss it and dump. But when you can slow down, when you can take the easy way, when you can just look, and it takes 2 hours to do that, so what? So I saw that same river differently. I kept thinking about the famous Heraclitus, the Greek philosopher, saying, you know, you never step in the same river twice because it's not the same river and you're not the same person. And I also thought about how I wish that people understood how important it is to protect that part of the world. We are in Maine are so incredibly lucky. We have the last, I mean, the Adirondack State Forest is beautiful. It's 6 million acres of gorge. There are gorgeous parts of the White Mountains and the Green Mountains. But we have in our rivers something that the rest of them don't have. And whether it's the Penobscot, the Kennebec, the Androscoggin, the Saco, that we have these rivers that flow to the sea. And they go through some of the most beautiful parts of northern New England. And when I got back to camp, I looked, and over in the corner of the living room was a pair of L.L. Bean boots I've had since that first trip.
Hmm.
Now, I have a newer L.L. Bean boots because they've been resold, and they're at the end. And I thought, when I stepped into the Penobscot the first time, I was wearing those boots. They're still here. I want the Penobscot to still be there all these years from now. Because I want my grandchildren. I mean, my son already knows more about that river than I'll ever know. He's canoed or kayaked virtually every bit of it. And he's done the same Allagash trip and stuff. But I would like to see more Mainers, you know, get off the jet ski, get in a canoe. You don't have to go to the whitewater. Find a stretch of flat water in one of our beautiful rivers and paddle slowly. Just go slowly and look and see and be grateful.
Well, and you're right. And there's so much of that in the state. I was reading a piece recently, and I haven't been there in probably 30 years. And I thought I need to go back to the Height of Land.
Oh,
I have not
yeah.
seen that in so long. And that it's such an incredible part of the state that I think a lot of residents have never visited before.
I remember the first time I was driving some equipment from Sugarloaf to Saddleback, and we're lending them some equipment. And then I was had to go down to Vermont, and someone had, you know, big truck full of bean netting and kinds of stuff. And I stopped at the Height of Land, and as I did, three of the biggest moose I've ever seen decided to parade across the road. And I'm convinced the Chamber of Commerce calls them, right? But I stopped, and I stayed and looked for a long time, and I said to myself, I don't want to forget what this looks like, you know, and there's so many places like that. I mean, if you just go up Chick Hill and Clifton and look around it and see Springy Pond and all those other ponds and over to Hat Case Pond and all that, you can, there's so much access to great public lands in the state of Maine. I wish we could get rid of North Maine Woods, but that'll probably never happen. But that, I don't want, you know, you don't need to build a cabin. You don't need, you just need to go there and enjoy it and go home.
And don't be in a hurry. Leave the phone behind.
Yep. Yeah, we had no phones, no, you know, I mean, if you're really into to remembering, you can get a GoPro and put it on your head and record whatever you want to see. But I think of something Maynard Gordon Bach always said about people recording his concerts. He didn't want people to record the concerts. And he said, why would you want to spoil that original feeling by seeing it over and over again? You know, it because then after a while, you just know all of it. I understand that a lot. Yeah. I mean, I had a long talk with Gordon about that one time. But I was really reminded of that day when we first started down that river. I said to myself, well, my family's been in this state since the early 1700s. My particular branch of the family, you know, moved away. And I said that day, so I'm coming back to Maine someday. I'm going to live here. This is where I want to be. And I can't tell you how grateful I am that that happened, because I sure do want to be here.
Now, how long have you had the camp?
35 years, oh, wow. I think. Yeah, we own it with my wife's brother and his wife and their daughter and son-in-law and kids. We have a logbook that goes forever. So this is the 33rd season we've had it. I almost bought a camp on Chesuncook the year when I was still in college, but it was on lease land. It was $1,900 and it was an old boom house as a camp and stuff. Our camp was many, many thousands more than that when we bought it, and it, we've done a lot of work on it. It's a really beautiful place today. And, you know, just seeing the kids, and my son, Ben, and Logan, their attachment to the place and how hard they work to help keep it up, it just makes me think, this is great.
Yeah, that's what camps are all about.
Yeah, as my grandfather said when we moved to Maine, and he was not 100 yet, but he was in his 90s, he said, it's a great mid-course correction. You're going home.
Yeah, absolutely. That's great. Wonderful stuff. Next week, we've got a guest on Sports Lit.
We sure do. We have Tim Manners, who compiled a unique book. He did not write this book. What he did was he had all the writings that Wade Hoyt had left behind, 8 boxes, and access to the Hoyt family. And he reconstructed Wade Hoyt's life in Wade Hoyt's own words. And it's a fascinating book. And he seems like a really interesting guy. That I really can't. I'm going to let him tell the story of how it came about, because it's so cool. The next week, we'll talk about Born to Run, a hidden tribe, super athletes, the greatest race in the world, about the Tarahumara people of the Sierra Madre who get drunk on corn beer and then run 100 miles. And then sometime after that, I don't know exactly when I'll have a chance to finish this, God in the Stadium, Sports and Religion in America by Robert J. Higgs, written in the mid-1990s, and I want to tell you, we didn't see coming, if we'd have paid attention to Jack, a lot of what we see now might not have happened.
Looking forward to all of it. Sports Lit 101 every Wednesday right here on Downtown. We will take a little break.